the title on the schedule up there says the role of Christian higher education today is it worth $50,000? We're concerned not just about the money, but also about the mission. And we're going to address that beginning with a panel of four people who have been both consumers of Lutheran higher education, and at least one has been a provider. The goal of Forms at Holden is to explore a topic or an issue and to learn from each other. So we don't look at these four people here as the experts who have the answer to this question, but more like the first speakers to get the ball rolling, to prime the pump, pick your metaphor. As the forum continues, if you disagree with someone, that's certainly within the game here, but please respond to each other gently. We're not here to do battle. We're here to hear from each other and to learn from one another. We do have one very firm rule about forums at Holden Village, and that's that they last only until 9:30. I'll try to keep watch of the time a little bit and give us a 4-minute warning or something in case people have last words that they want to get in. I thought it might be interesting to start out by asking how many of you have had some connection as a student, as a faculty member, as a parent, some kind of connection to a church college? Would you just call out which ones?
Luther College.
PLU.
PLU. Lots of PLU people.
St. Olaf,
Valparaiso. Yeah, so we're getting a lot of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're hearing that many of them are represented. There are 28 colleges that are affiliated with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. I don't know how many. 12 affiliated with the Missouri Synod, and then there's Valparaiso, which stands alone as an independent university with affinities but not affiliations. Okay. Let me just, I should introduce myself. My name is Deanne Lagerquist, and I teach at St. Olaf College. I have taught at Valparaiso and at Wittenberg, and I'm a graduate of California Lutheran. And I'm married to a Carthage grad, so we cover quite a few between us. I'm a historian, and it's impossible for me to introduce this without saying just I hope, two paragraphs of historical background. I'd like to say something about the origins of particularly the Lutheran colleges, although there are parallels of these in other churches. Many of these schools were founded as pre-seminary prep schools. Gettysburg is an example. Luther College is an example. Augsburg is an example. One that no longer exists, Concordia Fort Wayne, is another example. Schools that were specifically to prepare, at that time, young men to go to the seminary. Then there's a whole other group of schools that were founded to provide liberal arts to lay people. Valparaiso, St. Olaf, PLU are examples of that kind of origin. And then particularly in the Missouri Synod, we have schools, Concordia Seward, for example, that had a focus of teaching, to prepare teachers to teach in parochial schools. So there are several operational goals in the backgrounds of these schools. The audience for those schools at the outset was primarily church people, and often church people of a specific ethnic group, so that the colleges were called the college, our college, close affiliation between a particular group and its institution, so that those institutions had an important role to play in group identity. That's not to say that every sad Dane went to Dana College, but almost anyone who went to Dana College was a sad Dane. All the happy Danes went to Grandview. Or everyone who went to Grandview was a happy Dane. Okay. I'd like to say also something about terminology. And that's why I said specifically the title on the board is Christian Higher Education. Lutherans have tended to talk more about colleges of the church. I think the terminology is a significant distinction between two views of what the school is. Christian higher education, we hear that especially with schools like Wheaton, Westmont, and there is often the sense that the college is the church, college as church, and that's why at places like Wheaton, there are behavior codes that people have to sign, I will not dance, I will not drink, for example, because the college is coterminous with the church. Lutherans have tended to speak rather of colleges of the church, the college as something the church does. Some of the recent concerns have to do with changes in the composition of the student body and the faculty move away from that close identification with our college. Concerns, as the title suggests, about cost. And then thirdly, some concerns about goals. One of my colleagues is fond of saying that although education is a good thing, that doesn't necessarily mean the church should be in the business of it. Okay. We have four speakers, as I said, who will launch our discussion, and we'll start with Judy, then go to George, Chuck, and Jan. I've asked each of them to say something about which school they've had connections with, when that was, what the value of that education was to them, and what they think the church's mission in education should be. So, Judy.
I'm Judy Nolde, and I attended Valparaiso University, and I graduated in 1987. I guess first I'd just like to say that I think all education is really invaluable, and I think it's impossible to place a dollar amount on education because it's just an incredible thing to be able to participate in and learn from. Values that have come to me, I was extremely affirmed in college and nurtured and attending Valparaiso, it's a very small university, and I felt like I could receive the personal attention that I needed at any time. That professors went out of their way to include me and to recognize some of my talents and abilities and help me to recognize those, and as well as to see what ways I could promote those and use them to in a career. As far as the mission of the church and the university, I'd say there's an underlying Christian atmosphere about the entire university. And that's in all classrooms, whether it be physics or English or theology. There's just the Christian spirit is there, and it's felt at all times. And it's Valparaiso is centered around the chapel itself. It can be seen almost from any building on campus. And it has half an hour each day set aside for morning prayer, and classes are scheduled around that time. And that's extremely valued by students and faculty, and I think that's such an important thing about the university. I don't know what else to say.
It's good. Well, that gets us started. Thank you, Jim.
Is sure. The mic operating or not?
That's only a recording mic.
Okay. If they could speak up a little bit more.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll try. I've kind of got a little bug today. But anyway, I'm George Lyle. And I graduated from Luther College in 1976. In choosing Luther, I think my parents had most to do with me going there. This early 70s were sort of changing time for everybody. It was a difficult time for the whole United States, I think, and that was a time when there was a lot of kind of political rebellions at some of the bigger universities, and I think my parents kind of felt better about sending me to a smaller school. Luther College was beautiful as far as I was concerned. I was delighted to be there. As far as it being a church school, I'm not sure that those were times when I think as an older teenager, I was only, I guess, 18 when I began, and the church was at that time kind of secondary, perhaps, and I think now, you know, how children grow up in the church and then kind of drift away and come back. So when I was my college years, I guess I was had drifted away. So that it being a Christian church or a Lutheran church didn't seem to be that important at the time. It was a smaller school, which was good for my transition from a smaller high school. I was very interested in the University of Iowa, which was a huge university, but that wasn't to be. And I really at that time didn't know any different either. I think a lot of young students entering into college, they don't have anything much to compare that with, so whatever experience they have is new and different, and that's all that they would know. I did manage to take advantage of the university. I graduated with a degree in art and somehow managed to maintain that. Now I have a job in the field of art. I'm a professor at the University of Florida. So I went through a lot of changing times. I really didn't know what the value of that education was, and it took probably 10 or 15, well, 14 years now since I've graduated to really begin to realize just what that education was all about. It was a liberal arts education, which now at big universities is not very popular. Shortly after I graduated, I think the concern shifted to better jobs, higher paying jobs, and as I began teaching, the art field was really a small, unimportant, seemingly unimportant part of many education degrees or university college degrees. People wanted to learn how to make money by either being in business or some engineering field or something. But at the time when I was at school, looking back on it now, I really do appreciate the well-roundedness of a liberal arts degree. The school was small and comfortable, and somehow I did manage to take advantage of what it had to offer. Now, I don't know, are we supposed to compare with my experiences now teaching at a large university? The University of Florida is 35,000 students, and the facilities are overwhelming at a university compared to a smaller college. Luther had maybe 2,000 students, I think. And so the facilities and the opportunities at larger university are usually far greater than a small college could offer. In my little part of the university, the pottery end of it is enormous compared to the education that Luther College had to offer. And I resented that for many years, thinking, gee, if only I had a better beginning, a better training in art, because in many cases my art training was very marginal compared to people that I'm competing with in the job field, with their beginnings as art trainings in the art field. And it's very difficult to go back and relearn your roots or your basics. You can't really do that. You pick that up along the way. So I went through a period of sort of regretting that I went to a Luther College, but it's difficult to say. You don't get a second chance, and I do appreciate the opportunity to have been there. I think I appreciate nature and many different things that I probably wouldn't have. I would have been lost perhaps at a larger university. But I just wonder now, I think, dollars and cents wise, I guess, and that's difficult to compare it that way, but a larger institution does often have a better facility, meaning that the equipment or the buildings more to offer in a wide variety of ways. But it's very difficult to compare a small community kind of college with a kind of a cold atmosphere, or you could just be submerged in a large university and get lost. Or in some ways, however, I think that there's all these small little communities within the large university that form, and it's difficult to say. I think students today the students that I see are more interested in getting a good education. They're really working hard at it. And when I was going to school, it was maybe accepted thing that you did. It's really hard for me to recall in many things. It's starting to get a little while back for me. I've been in constant contact with the university or college level since then, but it's hard to say. There are a lot different goals today than there were just 10 or 15 years ago. But I kind of lean towards larger institutions just because I'm with that now, and I think that they have in many ways more for the money, but as far as quality of an education, that's difficult to say, because every school has its own, for every person, every school is different, and for each person it's a different experience, and it's one you can't repeat, so you just hope for the best.
Chuck?
I have a long background in Lutheran education. I'm Chuck Kuhnert. Excuse me. I began in Lutheran education in kindergarten at Bethany Lutheran in Detroit, Michigan, and attended Lutheran elementary school through the eighth grade at Bethany Lutheran, and then I attended Lutheran High School East in Detroit for 4 years, graduated from there and went to Concordia College, Ann Arbor, Michigan for 2 years. And then I attended Concordia College in Seward, Nebraska for 2 years, and I've been professor at Concordia College in Portland, Oregon for 21 years. I did teach at Concordia Academy in St. Paul, Minnesota for 1 year, but it was too cold, so I moved back to Portland. So my perspective is clouded, in fact, probably distorted by the fact that I have this strong Missouri Synod background. And the Missouri Synod has this, which is perhaps hard for ELCA people to grasp, but the Missouri Synod has this sort of innate understanding that Lutheran education is the Holy Grail, and you do it. You educate your children, and when they go on to high school, you educate them there, and then when they go on to college, you educate them there. And it's the one unique characteristic, I think, of the Missouri Synod that has a place in American history someplace. I'm not sure where. As far as the value of Christian education at the college level, you know, when we talk about Valparaiso, to me Valparaiso is this large university sitting on the plains of northwestern Indiana. And
it has about 3,000 students.
Yeah, I know. See, when I went to Concordia, Portland for the first time in 1969, when I graduated from Concordia Seward, I was assigned directly to Concordia, Portland to teach college. And it had 127 students, and I was on a faculty of 14, and life was different in those days. The mission was clear. Everybody, basically, except for a few recalcitrants, was in tune with the mission. That is, they knew what they were about. They were about preparing themselves or the students that they had to be professional church workers, to be teachers or pastors in the Lutheran Church. 90% of our students were Missouri Synod Lutheran, and 89% of those were German extraction, and we were all white, and we were all pure. and we all drank beer on Friday night, and, but that was sort of the nature of the beast. And then we went through this strange metamorphosis. It began in 74 with the synodical controversy in the Missouri Synod, which formed the AELC, and they went then became part of the ELCA. And it takes a PhD just to remember all the letters. But after that, the positions, the purpose, and the focus of the schools were not real clear anymore. And it's been the experience that in the past decade, the churches, the church schools that I've been familiar with, and that includes some schools like Pacific Lutheran and others, have in fact gone through tremendous struggle in retaining identity or focusing in on what their purpose is or what their mission is. And I would like to say that unless the church school has a mission, unless the church school has a mission, it has no business educating students. We do not need another educational enterprise in America. We need schools that understand what they're doing, and specifically if we're talking about church-related schools, we need schools that express the gospel in their daily life with the students that they have to deal with. And I think we are now challenged with a new type of excitement in our school, and that is that we now have only 27% Lutheran students in Concordia, Portland, which is a far cry from the old days. And we have 27% international students. So we have as many, and they are not Lutheran. And they are mainly Buddhist or nothing. And they are a tremendous mission field that's been brought to us. So I think it's a rough go right now because you're challenged in the church school all over the place with secularization that takes you away from or may take you away from or lead you down a path that takes you away from the function of any church, period, which is to, in fact, witness to the gospel. So.
Thank you, Jean. My name is Janet Bowman, and I started out in the Missouri system too, in Concordia St. Paul for 2 years, but then I went a different route. I went out to teach for a year, and then went a couple of summer schools at Seward, and then at Mankato State College or something, and then we moved. I met Walt and we married, and it took me then 10 years later to complete. So in 56 I graduated there in 2 years, and then in 73 or so, no, in what, 71, San Jose. Yes, in 73 I finally graduated from River Forest after taking one or two courses a year for many years. My experience at Concordia was marvelous. I had had also parochial school 1 to 8, and then I had public high school. And in the parochial school system, there was a real community with my chances to be leader in what we did. We moved into the high school and we moved into a larger system, and we were sort of that Lutheran True School over there, and you weren't part of the mainstream. And so it was difficult to move into that, the cultural thing that was in Fold itself. And I chose St. Paul just simply because we were Missouri Synod Lutherans, and I had wanted to be a pastor, could not because we were as a woman. And therefore, teaching was my next goal, and I discovered that was what I wanted to do, as it turned out. That's what I had wanted to do. And I did it then, and I have also taken graduate coursework at Ohio State University. I thought, after I graduated from River Forest and St. Paul, that my education was inferior, and that, but that, you know, I thought that that's the way, until I got into the Columbus school system, discovered that the skills I have are tremendous. A lot of my colleagues have not been taught to do the art and the music and the many of the things that we had. And I am now not able to teach religion, and that's a regret of mine, but there are no parochial schools in the area. I would like to do that. Value. I think my son said to me once, now our sons, all three sons, have gone to Valpo, and I think they all met their wives there. They're all in the church somewhere. I'm not saying that they're they're certainly not in Missouri Synod, but none of them are in Missouri Synod. I would not go back either, just because of my leadership in the congregation as an elder and as, you know, assistant at communion and so forth, which Missouri would not allow. There's no way I would ever go back to Missouri now. But back to the Evaluum. they're all in the church, and our son, who is teaching University of Missouri, he's getting his doctorate there. He said that the advantages, the biggest advantages that he sees as he's teaching now, is that you have personal attention from the really good teachers in a smaller school, and they don't get that in the university. They'll get, like himself, a teaching assistant, or you know, and he said they got it at, you know, Belleville, and I'm sure that the other small schools, the same thing is true. You get the good teachers, and I certainly know that now. I went to OSU in graduate school, took a number of courses there to get my certification for special education, and thought I would not be able to compete. Now, you got to realize this was 10, 15, almost 20 years later, that point, and no problem competing, because I had a good background. So I think the value, I really am excited. I am glad our sons could have gone somewhere else, did not, and I'm glad they didn't.
Thank you. I think that these have helped us focus a little bit on the relationship between mission and value, and throw it open to your comments. I would ask that when you speak, that you tell us your name, and if you have some affiliation with the college, which college or colleges, and what years. Now, that doesn't mean that if you don't have such an affiliation, you can't talk, of course, but if you have one, go ahead and, please.
Tilford Helley, and I graduated from a state college out in South Dakota, General Beadle State College. A small teacher's training institution, and it was a good school. I wanted to go to Wartburg in the worst way, and Mr. Norm Fintel, who just retired, I never did meet him, turned me down, and I don't know why. So I floundered for a while until I got my act together, but I really wanted a church school. Now I'm fortunate that my two sons are able to attend. And I think, like you, sir, mission is important, because one is in a church school, and the lights are on, but I don't know who's in charge. You know what I mean?
Without
knowing
into
it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you send them to a church school with all the costs involved to learn how to drink beer, but it's very prevalent. And probably I'm living in the dark ages, but that's not the biggest example. But I think there's more camaraderie in a church school. They keep closer track of you, and you. I think the mission may have gotten too large in some of these schools. And I deplore the 8-9% increase every year. I don't know if they're saving up for the lack of students that's coming very soon. And you object, and they say, well, you only owe the price of a new car, whether it was 1960 or whether it's 1990. But it cost you a new car over 10 years. I mean, the price is comparable. And I think it's fortunate you can attend a private school. And I've always felt a lack of fortune for not attending. But I was rejected, so I had to turn to a state school.
My name is Alita Chasik, and I attended Luther College, as George did. I'm George is married to my cousin. In our family, there's three in my family and three in George's family who attended Luther, and they're all married people who attended Luther. So when we get together, it's quite a reunion. But my comment comes more as the parent of a current student at Luther. The tuition bill came the day we left for Holden. So I'm acutely aware of how much it costs to send him to Luther. And I would just affirm, too, that we need to be about mission in our churches, in our church schools, if indeed we are going to be also about education, because I also have a child in high school, so we are looking again. We're in that tedious process of looking at schools again. And there are many, many schools that you can go to for $12,000, $14,000 and get a fine education. And we need to be, the churches need to be distinctive and claim the gospel and not be ashamed of it and not be parochial about it either. But as a parent who's paying that bill, I'm not looking for the school to produce particularly someone with job skills. They could stay home in Milwaukee and go to the technical college if all I was looking for was job skills. I'm looking for the whole person to be educated. And I really believe that that's what our schools do, our church schools do. My aunt and uncle are also here tonight, and they attended St. Olaf College, as did my mom. So I guess I come from a very biased background. But I think it's important as we move into the 90s and the pool of students becomes smaller and to be very clear about who we are, the church schools, and what the mission is.
Gertrude.
I'm Gertrude Lundholm, and I'm from Rock Island, Illinois, and I'm connected with Augustana College, formerly LCA. Not LCA, with all of you. I went there as a student and I married one of the professors, and so he taught there for 47 years. So I'm close to my 50th anniversary. It's a tremendous school, but I think we need to recognize that a small school can't offer everything. And that's where we need to support each other in our colleges. We have some very strong departments and some are weaker, and I think there's where we can help each other out recommending our church-related schools because they are very special. We have a history of music at ours that's over 100 years old, Oratorio Society. Goes way back. Geology departments and other, we were way ahead in the sciences. Those are top fields. Speech is another one. We've won national. All the areas that go along the speech department. Started speech therapy years and years ago. So we have a lot of special education that's important too. We aren't supported by the churches as congregations anymore, but we're still church affiliated. And that's the basis for the thing. We had some firm, I don't know what they're called, maybe you've had it in your colleges too, that come out and does a survey on how good your colleges are, where your strengths are, where your weaknesses are. And I remember this was done about 4 years ago, and he said, your school is tremendous, you're just not telling enough about it. He said, you go to a university, you don't begin to get the top teachers, you have an associate teacher maybe, well here you get the very top people. And it's a much closer relationship. We also have all the foreign studies available. Every single year, the students have a chance to go to the Far East, Africa, to South America. And that didn't occur in my day, but I think how lucky these kids are. And that's included in their cost. And one of the advantages I feel of a small school, at the same time, I know it's terribly expensive. Well, I went through on $500 a year. I still had to work for my room and board because I didn't have any money. Can be done. I had scholarships available. They still have that today. You could work your way through if you have to. on campus, off campus, and so on. Internships are students who go out into business and really experience what they're going to major in. Sometimes it's Washington, D.C., political sciences, industry that we have in the area. So I think the small school has a lot to offer. Our enrollment for next year was already closed. I mean, the limit was done in March without having asked for it. And we have parents who want to kids to come. So then we have a problem now about housing, and that's where the city gets upset because houses are rented or bought by parents who want their kids to go there, and then we don't have control. So that's one of the disadvantages of it. But I think we should all emphasize our strong points. You know, if we know about each other and what you're good in, then we should support our Lutheran, the music thing that they have in all the Lutheran schools now is another wonderful thing that they go around to different campuses. And it's been at Augustana twice. And while the students are on our campus for 6 weeks, they get advantage, get the experience to be in the symphony, the city symphony while they're there, Mozart Festival every June, besides the college probably get to participate in. So I think each school must have those special qualities that you do not get in the university.
Okay. You hear a lot about the size that the Lutherans, that the church schools are small. There are other small schools.
I think another thing that, when we talk about the university, I'm familiar with the University of Wisconsin. 20% of the kids who enter as freshmen finish in 4 years. That means 80% do not. And when you talk about value, then the percentages are much different in our liberal arts.
Yes, sir.
I'm Jim Order, and I graduated from the University of Minnesota. You know, I'm a small, intimate group of people.
They care about you, Jim.
Well, they do if you take the effort to meet your instructor, and I didn't take advantage of that, and I regret that today. But I'm not sure that I would have taken advantage of that in a small school either, and I think it's really up to the individual student and how they grow up and their family, and how their basis is laid well before they're a freshman in college, whether they're going to succeed or not. Minnesota doesn't graduate very many people in 4 years either, but a lot of them graduate in 5 years because it's a community-based university system. They have a lot of people live at home and work, and you can't take 15, 18 credits a quarter and work 25 hours a week. It doesn't work. And it's a marvelous bargain, whatever it costs, maybe $3,000 or $4,000 a year.
My name is Glenn Johnson. I'm a faculty person at the University of Washington. And I've seen the clouds on both sides because Susan and I dated, and Susan was at PLU and I was at UW. And I'm a product of two universities, Michigan, the University of Washington, Michigan. And I get the sense here that this audience has had mostly Lutheran education. I think to have a good discussion, you ought to probably hear from both sides. And I know the benefits of both sides. When Susan was at PLU, I think it cost her about $3,000 a year, and it cost me about $1,500 a year, so the ratio was 1 to 2. The university education now at Washington for tuition, room and board, and books and so forth might be $5,000, something like that. But at PLU, we were curious, by the way, where you could get a $50,000 education.
It was a round number.
We came here to find out where you get one of these $50,000.
Concordia, Portland.
But the ratio now has swung from about 5,500 to 15,000 and going up. You visit St. Olaf, which we did, and other places. The real question, there's two things. Is it still the same value? And secondly, are we creating elitist universities? Can only the, you know, kids that, where you can really afford to send them there for this fabulous education, you know, are you still getting the cross sections that we see at our public universities?
I think that's a really good point. And at St. Olaf, one of the things that I often say is that St. Olaf was founded by immigrants for their children and for other immigrants. It was for outsiders to give them a way in. And that's something that a lot of Lutheran schools have in their background. But it's something that has fallen out for many of us when we begin to talk about size, quality, excellence, and that those are the primary things that we provide, and don't think about who is on the outside and what can we provide for people who don't have access to other things.
What's tuition at St. Olaf?
Ask a parent.
14,000.
That's comprehensive fee.
I mean, that's it.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, comprehensive fee is 14,000.
Or 14,002 or something.
Yeah.
I like to say, though, there is a mitigating circumstance that at least at Concordia Portland, financial aid is structured in such a way so that we, in fact, probably have a disproportionate number of lower-income people at Concordia Portland compared to the general population. We have most of our students come from blue-collar families. Very few are from, well, to be quite honest, very few are from families of great means, because they wouldn't send them to Concordia Portland if they were. we are a very non-elitist college, and still appeal to really the working class. And our tuition, room and board this year will be $10,000. But our 85-87% of our students receive financial aid, and the average award is somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000. So the actual cost per student is closer to $5,000, and then some of that is available in loans.
Jan?
Jan Larson, Valpo 67. I was wondering, as you were talking, it sounds like your school situation is pretty much a result of demographics and where you're located and what other schools are around and so on, rather than deliberate policy of some kind, although I can mention scholarship policies.
In terms of, you're talking about the makeup of the student population?
Yes. In relation to what Dean has said.
I think the scholarship policy has been deliberately set to allow anybody to attend who wants to attend. But the direction the school has gone with its programs has been a more or less planned operation by the administration.
Well, I was going to ask in the more broad way is, are there any other Lutheran schools who deliberately have a policy of setting aside a certain number of places in a particular graduating class for lower income people? Well, I guess that would probably work through the scholarship system, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering if there's an effort, as there is, for example, in the Catholic public schools in my town, to make sure that there's a wide range of different types of people that have access to that education.
I would think Suomi, which was Finnish, now has a very high population of African American students, and that was a very deliberate effort on their part. And Uppsala, also, which is in East Orange, New Jersey. Those are the two that I know at Augsburg to a certain degree, but I don't know that they have proportional.
It's pretty high compared
but,
to all the other.
Right, but they don't have proportional entrance.
Oh.
It just, but their programs are designed so that it's more attractive, I think.
Part of the problem many times is a geographic problem. I mean, face it. If you're an Afro-American, you're not going to probably be attracted to Seward, Nebraska to go to school. You know, it's just the realities of life are that Concordia Portland, which is in Northeast Portland, which is an interracial neighborhood, has a much easier time attracting blacks and other races to the campus. So we have a very, very diverse student body. Concordia Seward, which originated in the same kind of mold, does not and probably never will have, because they're going to have a tough time recruiting anybody to Seward, Nebraska, who is a minority. They have done, in their defense, they have done some efforts with American Indians and with the Marshall Island people, of all people, but and they've had some success there with that. But
I think parents shouldn't overlook larger universities. I guess I'm kind of an advocate of that, because the cost, the University of Florida is the cheapest education in the United States for big universities, which may kind of seem kind of cheesy, even Florida is not well known for education. But on the other hand, the freshman class had the highest number of merit scholars of any university. Is it grade point of incoming freshmen, it was 3.2. That was the grade point. It was a very outstanding, you know, it's tough to get into that university as cheap as it is. It's kind of a well-kept secret, and I think it has a lot to do with the family upbringing, whether or not these students are going to, their Lutheran church is right next to the university, and they have programs that could service those students or get them involved. But it's really up to the student, the individual, to make it for themselves, make their education whatever they want to make it. They have the opportunity to have a one-to-one rapport with their instructors, the same as a smaller school. My classes are not so large that I can't get to know all my students individually, and it's not uncommon. It's not like some huge thing where you're just a drop in the bucket. There is a lot. There are 3,500 faculty, so there's one per every 100 students, kind of works out. But you do have the opportunities if you take advantage of them. And I just think the parents sometimes overlook that. Maybe they just aren't aware. They're just a little bit scared, perhaps. But I think the bigger universities do have a lot to offer. And it's really up to the student, the upbringing, to maintain that, I don't know, connection with their religion or the mission of a religious background or a school that's tied with religious connections. But it's again, it's up to the student to take advantage of the institution that they're in. And sometimes I hear students saying, wait, the more they pay, the better it is. And that's, I don't think that's always true at all. That's a fallacy. I think young kids think if they pay more for something, then it must be better. That's not always true.
Someone here, and there was someone here, and then there was someone up in the balcony. So one, two, three.
Okay, Joan Dietrich, University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, 1963. And I guess when I went to college, was the dark ages, because I was paying $100 a semester. And now we have an 11-year-old, and we're gearing up toward the time when he's going to be going to college. And I don't come from a Lutheran school background at all. And I'm thinking toward that. I think that that's something that we'd like him to have. But it sounds kind of scary as far as the amount, because we aren't nearly near that amount, and by the time he gets to college, it'll probably be double what it is today, and it's like a never-ending pip. But I'm just thinking, are there scholarships or things that if he does well, that he would be able to take advantage of?
Yeah, let me. I can address it specifically in a number of ways. There are, at every college that I'm aware of, there are two types of financial aid. There is need-based aid, and there is aid based on some kind of talent, either academic talent, musical talent, athletic talent, or whatever. Every college has that. And the need-based aid at most schools figures out to close to 50% of the actual what they consider to be the parents' effective contribution. So it amounts to actually a surprisingly high amount of money. Most people think that scholarships are hard to come by and few and far between. But in reality, they're not. Most colleges have lots of scholarship money that they deal out. And the minority are those who don't receive scholarships of some sort, and substantial ones at that.
I could echo that. I work with scholarships in high school on the other end. And there's lots of money available, both in the schools and in other places other than the school.
My name's Sarah Groy. I went to Luther College, and I also took an interim course at Augsburg in Minneapolis. And I'm glad I did have the education that I have, but the one thing I think we've talked about is the lack of diversity, and that was more prominent at Luther than maybe at Augsburg or maybe some of the Eastern schools or the Western schools. And that is a big regret for me, having interest in the international realm. And I think now, for the Midwestern schools at least, they're really turning to pushing international experiences. I know St. Olaf has a very good program in international studies at the college, and got a good program, and there are other schools too. But you have to remember that if you want your child, or if you yourself are, you know, I don't want to label students as kids, because they aren't all kids. Mm-hmm. But that's adding to the cost too. I mean, I studied abroad too. I was lucky enough to be able to. My sister is at St. Olaf, and she's saving her dimes and pennies and everything to be able to go in the Mideastern program. But that ups it even more than it already is, and it's kind of a test to diversity. I mean, you can say that, oh, we have 100 international students on our campus and 50% of our students have some sort of international experience, whether it be interim or semester. But you're paying for those students to come to the college and some sort of scholarship programs, and you're also paying for extra money for them to go abroad and study. So it's kind of a false diversity. I think some more money, more energy, more something, more mission has to be put into trying to diversify just the regular local student population. I think that was a big issue for me.
Up here, and then Rick, and then Ed, and then over there. And then it'll be 90.
Lauren Dudley, graduate of Valparaiso in 1970. First of all, our foreign student that lived with us, we went to a graduation at our local high school in Eastern Washington. And I was surprised how few out-of-region universities were represented for scholarships. And then I went and heard Dr. Harder, Valpo's current president, and he said what's resulting recently is that a lot of the grants and funding, you probably know better about that than I do, but a lot of them now are not done at the federal level, but they're done at the state level. So there's a breaking away of cross-country travel, opportunities to go out of the area for college and get full scholarships and so forth, and I think that's a trend. And the thing I was surprised at this high school graduation, a lot of the scholarships were from PLU and Gonzaga, pretty much private institutions instead of public school. And I'm not sure what is causing that trend, but I just caught my attention.
My name is Rick Dunning. I graduated from Carthage in the mid-70s. Another way to think about value in the church schools is how well the graduates do with what else they go on to. After Carthage, I went on to graduate school at Michigan State and eventually University of Wisconsin. And at Wisconsin, that was one of the very best schools for my discipline, which is geography, one of the finest programs in the country. And I was there with students from all of the major universities, Harvard, Yale, Berkeley, Johns Hopkins, Oxford, Cambridge, the Sorbonne. And here I was from rural Carthage. But I did all right. I could compete with those people. I could hold my own. And I found out that my education was better than I thought it was. There's some quality in this school.
I think I'd probably reiterate that. I'm Ed McGee. I graduated from California Lutheran pre-presumption when there was still a college, before they decided they needed to become a university in 1976. I'm surprised maybe a little bit at this discussion, because so much of it is turned on what I think Deanne pointed to already, which was big school, small school. I think that we could sit around and we could talk about the pros and cons of that a lot. I too, while I wasn't in a manual dexterous field like art, I talk about this small library that we had. It was totally inadequate. Of course, USC and UCLA were within traveling distance for us. Yes, you can get to know your professors at a large university. You don't necessarily have to know them in a small university, but it's harder not to know them when you're in a class of 12 to 20 or 30. You get to know the professor on a first name basis and he you or she you, and the fact that if you're not in class three times, they know it in your grade. I think when it comes to whether when we evaluate colleges for our own children, I think our own children have to be evaluated and what do they need. Oftentimes a small college or university can be more directive, more at least tutorial than maybe a major university might be. There's more one-on-one kind of offering. But I think maybe to turn this discussion again, to go back to the value of a Christian education. And one of the discussions I hope to hear here and really open is what makes a Christian education Christian? I have a little bit of a problem with something that was insinuated a little earlier, that a Christian education means that you will learn to not drink beer. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to point a finger at you, but believe me, at any small Christian or anywise university, there will be that group of people who are drinking beer, smoking dope. I mean, there is that faction there. But what is it, and what is the value of a Christian education that continues to give it value? We may come up with different answers to that. Coming from the San Diego area right now, there's a local Christian college, it's Baptist, who has been issuing Bachelor of Science degrees in creation science. The state of California has yanked their approval to issue a creation science BS and have it abstained in the academic community. And there's a big scream over there going, okay, is that a Christian education, that they can teach creationism and offer a BS in that degree? I have to say that from my own personal standpoint, that the value of the Christian education is, for me, was as much as anybody else, Jerry Swanson, who is well known to the community up here at Holden, the fact that it was there, that Jerry made that available to us as a campus pastor, that there was dialogue that was ongoing, that was our contemporary Christian conversations on a weekly basis, which was more valuable to me, by the way, than our chapel schedules. That time when we dialogued with the professors on an intimate Christian kind of a setting. But again, that still needs to be led. You cannot, when an adult at 18 or 19 years old becomes that age, you cannot force feed them Christianity. And that's not going to happen. So again, my question still comes back to, what is Christian, if we're going to talk about the value of a Christian education?
We have 2 minutes. I've already sort of winked at this gentleman that he can talk. And then after that, I will charge you to take the conversation with you to the dining hall, to coffee break, to the porches, because we won't... I don't think you're going to tell us the whole answer, are you? Okay, well, say what you'd like in 2 minutes.
Well, I'm Max Lundgren from Pasadena, California. I went to Augustana College. I've been back from a 60th reunion, so I've had a daughter and a son graduate from California Lutheran, daughter-in-law, a son-in-law from Pacific Lutheran, and one off-breed from Sanford. I couldn't hear what most of the people up there said, but I didn't detect a lot of enthusiasm for a Lutheran college. I would like to negate that and say that probably if we hadn't gone to a Lutheran college, most of us probably wouldn't even be here tonight. There's a certain thing you get in a Lutheran college that you don't get other places, I don't think. I haven't attended any other college, so I have to say that. But I see my own children, and I see my friends. I've been connected with California Lutheran College quite a bit, not as an instructor or anything, but just as a booster. And California Lutheran is listed as, I think, number 14 among the 25 top colleges in the United States. So I think you can get a good education there. Sure, it costs money, but I think it's worth it.
And as I said, I hope you'll continue the conversation. Go out and talk. Thank you.